HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 6, recorded Monday, February 13th, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Automated QA, makers of Test Complete, providing automated testing of Windows, .NET Framework, Java, and web applications. Online at www.automatedqa.com. And by peterbloom.com. Start with better controls, finish with better sites. Online at www.peterbloom.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott explores the Linksys WRT54GL hackable router.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin, and you're listening to Hansel Minutes number 6. I'm here with Scott again, and we're talking this week about the Linksys router, the mythical Linksys router that you can do all sorts of things with. Right, Scott?
Absolutely. You can pick these guys up for next to nothing.
It's amazing they still make them. Now that they know they can be hacked.
They've made many versions of them. I've got a version 1.1 and a version 2. You can flip this little blue box over and look underneath, and it'll tell you the hardware version. And then somewhere around version 4, they switched over from Linux as their main OS to something called VxWorks. Mm. They lowered the memory, and they tried to make things really cheap. Mm. And people flipped out. People were like, wow, I totally can't hack into this now. And people were fearing the death knell of this device. And then they actually came out with a WRT54GL, the Linux version. They basically brought back that version for the hackers.
So what kind of stuff can you do with this?
These are those little blue boxes with the rabbit ears in the backs. They're very kind of distinct in the way that they look. And
right.
They're little routers, and they've got two wireless antennas in the back. And underneath it all, though, this is a little Linux machine. There's a really interesting hacking guide at linuxelectrons.com, shrinkster.com/C1J. That's a complete hardware hacking guide where the guy literally walks through step by step all the different little chip details. He kind of pulls the thing apart and basically reverse engineers all the hardware. Like, what can I what can I solder? What can I mess around with?
Wow.
The kind of hacking I'm talking about more is with the, what can we do with the software?
Right.
But, that hacking guide is really interesting. Other people have hooked up like Pringles cans to the antennas to try to boost the wireless power.
Really?
Yeah.
I always found that messing around with antenna lengths does weird things. They're not always good.
Sure, you can buy an extended antenna for these things, but interestingly, the firmware comes with a default value of 84 milliwatts, and you can pump it up to 240 milliwatts.
Oh, wow.
Using these firmwares. One of the firmwares that you can flash this with is called Hyper WRT, which is basically a fork of Linksys's own firmware, and their primary claim to fame is the ability to pump up the transmission. So, people can cover much greater area and break all sorts of FCC rules and such.
Ah, great.
So there's a whole series of firmware that is not official. Again, Linksys will sell you these things, but they make sure that you're aware that when you flash the firmware to something alternative, it's on you.
Yeah.
So this is actually great. You say to yourself, why would they bother making this? Well, they get to sell lots of hardware, and they don't have to support it.
Well,
so
okay.
It's the best of both worlds, right?
They're not liable in any way for anything anybody does with it, so, right?
It's just like a gun manufacturer. They sell you this hardware, and you do what you want to do with it, and they don't have to sweat it.
So you said there's about nothing you can't do with it. What are some really interesting things people have done? Let's start with the mundane and get to the really outrageous.
On the mundane side, there's a really great website called linksysinfo.org at shrinkster.com/C1B. And these guys have gone to all of the effort to collect all of the different kinds of firmware that are available for this particular device. There's a number of different, literally a dozen or more different kinds of firmware. Most of them are either based on one of three different branches. There's the main stuff that Linksys did. There's something called OpenWRT, that's an open source WRT, and then there's various branches off of that firmware. Then there's a company called Sveasoft, S-V-E-A Soft, and various branches off of their stuff. the mundane stuff is you can take hyper WRT and pump up the power output of your device.
Now, that basically means a longer range?
Well, like, yeah, more greater range of people can cover an entire cul-de-sac or, you know, the whole dead end and give free wireless to all of their neighbors.
I see.
It adds additional fields for things like port forwarding.
Good for a restaurant or something like that.
Well, so that actually brings us to a different topic. There's a thing called a captive portal. You know how when you show up somewhere and you look at your wireless configuration, it says, oh, there's a wireless hotspot nearby.
Right.
I'll click on that. I get an IP address. And as soon as I launch a browser and I go to CNN.com, it does a redirect and it captures me. It's called a captive portal. And it will send me off somewhere to log in or do whatever I want.
Right.
There is an open source captive portal called ChiliSpot. C-H-I-L-L-I, Spot, ChiliSpot, that you can use along with a firmware called DDWRT at shrinkster.com/C1C. And these two products working in conjunction with each other can have you put together a captive portal. So you could give free wireless to your entire neighborhood, but only if they have names and passwords.
Ah.
So then you could charge your neighbors if you wanted to.
And then when the government calls, you can hand over that information and makes lots of friends.
Yeah, the government or your ISP.
Right.
Some ISPs allow sharing. Some of the smaller ISPs will allow sharing as a way of distinguishing themselves. And there's a wiki at personaltelco.net or shrinkster.com/C1E that is a list of all the different ISPs and whether or not they promote the sharing of your connection with your neighbors.
Wow, cool.
Now, there's a larger worldwide group that has got custom firmware called Phone, F-O-N. I think it's Phone. It might be Fawn, at F-O-N.com. And you can go up there, download firmware, and become a phonero. That's their word for someone who's in their club. And this is a worldwide name password club where anyone else running this firmware, you will automatically connect to.
So I can install phone. Oh, that's so cool.
Isn't it cool? I could show up in Brooklyn. I could sit down. I could say, oh, there's other phone people out in this area. And they've also got an online map that'll show you where all these different hotspots are. And they're trying to basically blanket the earth with these things in a free wireless
That's very
cloud.
Cool. So, you know, so if you're a restaurant or a coffee house, a coffee shop, and you have wireless, you could put that firmware in your router and put a little sticker on the window that says we're a phone-friendly shop.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and there were a lot of people doing, you know what war driving is when people get in their car and wander around looking for stuff. And now with GPSs, there's lots of really interesting websites that will show you whether or not someone's actually driven by your house.
Network Stumbler, great tool.
Yeah, Network Stumbler, another evil and very cool tool that people can do.
Yeah, I've done that with a tablet. Go out with a tablet with Network Stumbler, and we ought to talk about Network Stumbler a little bit.
Yeah, so Network Stumbler basically listens to the underlying communications that are going back and forth with your router and moves the Windows wireless zero configuration stuff out of the way. And when you're doing Network Stumbler, you're going to be kicked off of your current wireless network and you'll be listening to that kind of raw feed. Once I took a train from Seattle to Portland and I left Network Stumbler on as well as being attached to my GPS, I had a little inexpensive Microsoft Streets and Trips GPS, and it logged the names of all the different open, unsecured, unencrypted networks that were running around as I went by them on the train.
That's amazing. Shrinkster.com C1O or netstumbler.com. I've used this as well just to, you know, find out I was interested in knowing how many open ports there were. And, you know, within a span of three towns, I found about 25 open networks. These are just people who left their, you know, networks totally unsecured. You could sit outside their house and hitch a ride on their internet access.
It's really very disappointing, actually. I went to a friend's house recently to set her machine up and basically, you know, just as all of us nerds do, you go over, you run Windows Update, you make sure they have all the latest patches, and you turn on the firewall, and then they think that you're great. I went over to a friend's house and did this and was really disappointed that the SSID, the identifier for her wireless network, was customer, and her name and password was admin1234.
Huh.
And the person who set up her wireless network from the local Comcast affiliate didn't set up any security at all. She was broadcasting throughout the entire building.
Wow. And probably not just internet traffic, her own personal traffic too.
Yeah. She had no firewall turned on. So it was very easy to go to Network Neighborhood and find her machine wide open.
And but that's unfortunate.
Let's get back to kind of basics to make sure that folks are clear what's going on here. We've got this Linksys router that in itself is a little Linux machine. It doesn't have a hard drive, but it does have memory. And just like you can flash firmware on a number of devices like your Pocket PC or your Replay TV or any kind of appliance, this means to look like an appliance, but it really is a little computer. I mean, you can really log into this Linux machine using something like PuTTY, P-U-T-T-Y, at shrinkster.com/C1G. This is like Telnet, but with security. You can PuTTY into this device, log in as root, and do an LS, you know, like the Linux equivalent of DIR, and really see what's going on. There's configuration files. There's a little web server. It is a real little machine.
You should talk a little bit about SSH. This is something me as a Windows guy didn't know about until a friend of mine told me.
SSH is a thing called Secure Shell, and this is a program that you would use to log into another computer, kind of like Telnet.
Mm-hmm.
But this is specific to Linux machines, and it's intended as a replacement for Telnet and rlogin and all these different things that would allow you to connect to another machine. For example, SourceForge, where I store some of the open source things that I do, you can get secure shell access and get access to your file system. And SSH supports various encryption algorithms like TripleDES, Blowfish, so it's highly secure shelling into, it's not wide open like Telnet, and you can set up keys and two-way security to make sure that only you can SSH into your particular machine. PuTTY is the tool that you would use on Windows to do that. So you get one of these devices and you put it onto your network and you go and you fire up a web browser and you visit 192.168.1.1 and you get a nice website and it says Linksys and everything's great. Under administration, there's a section that says upgrade firmware. You can go to one of these sites. The one I would suggest to start with is linksysinfo.org, the one we mentioned before, shrinkster.com/C1B, and decide what are you trying to get out of your router experience. If you just want the basics, but a little bit more, go with HyperWRT. If you want a lot of support and are willing to pay for it, Sviasoft will charge you $20, but they have, even though it's a free thing, they'll charge you $20 for support. Some people have a problem with some of their open source practices and will use a thing called DD-WRT instead, which is an open source version where you can donate to the gentleman, but it is a still a free process. Mm-hmm. I use personally this DD-WRT. I think that's a really great one. You can see that at shrinkster.com/C1C. That particular firmware, you just download as a zip file. It's a .bin, so it's just this big binary blob. From the website, you basically say browse, you select that file, and you say update. You always want to make sure that you do your update over a wired connection, because if your wireless connection goes down while you're doing this upgrade, you can do what's called bricking your router. And if you brick it, that means it's basically dead.
You can't get into it.
Well, not completely dead. It's bricked. So there's actually a way that you can unbrick. There's a thing called the WRT revival guide at shrinkster.com/C1I. And this revival guide has a step-by-step details on how you can use some low-level protocols and some safety pins to bring back your device from the dead.
Hey, this is Carl Franklin. Check out Test Complete from automatedqa.com. Test Complete does automated testing of Windows, .NET Framework, Java, and web applications. It's won Jolt Awards 2 years in a row from Software Development Magazine. Even though it's been voted best testing tool, Test Complete is really affordable. It costs just a fraction of what you'd have to pay for its nearest big-name competitor. Test Complete is standards-based and extensible with a well-documented plugin API. And the test scripts use familiar languages, VBScript, JavaScript, C# script, C++ script, and even Delphi script. You choose the language that works best for your team. You don't have to buy a dozen different modules to test all your applications. Test Complete is a full test development environment. It has features like an easy-to-use Windows test recorder that auto-creates test scripts and an advanced script editor with features like syntax highlighting, code completion, and context-sensitive help. It has Test Execute, a lightweight utility for running distributed tests, and Test Recorder, a library for building tests into your application. And if you plan on using Visual Studio 2005 Team System, Test Complete integrates nicely with it and adds a new Test Complete test type. So, do yourself a favor and download a free evaluation copy of Test Complete at automatedqa.com. Now, does this also allow anybody to completely hack into one of these devices that doesn't have a password?
So, as with all of these things, they use kind of the same underlying concepts. So once you upgrade, you post this form, and it's all done over the web. You're basically uploading that .bin file, and you'll have to reset your router. The next step you'll do is you'll reboot your router. After that, if you've reset the firmware to the factory defaults, yeah, it will actually change your name and password back to the defaults. You always want to update your name and your password to something that's not admin and password.
So the moral of the story is, you know, keeping the box physically locked under lock and key is always the best policy.
Whether or not you're using default firmware, you definitely need to be aware that your machine should be secured with a strong password. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So once you upgrade this to whatever firmware that you want, you then visit the exact same web interface, and you'll see some of the new features that have been exposed. Some of the things that one might want over the default are port forwarding that we mentioned before, but the really important one that I think doesn't get enough publicity is the thing called QoS, or quality of service.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
So I use Vonage, right? Vonage.com. That's the telephone service that lets you run all of your mainline telephones over the internet. Mm-hmm. Most people just get the Vonage box, they plug any old phone into it, and they forget about it. But I already had a bunch of existing phones in my house, so I went outside to where the phone wire comes from the street, from my local phone company, and I cut it. I cut it as it came into the house. I covered it in tape, and I put a note inside the phone box telling Verizon, my phone company, to not reconnect this wire. So now at this point, my house is completely off the grid in the copper phone wire sense of the word.
Right.
I have a single wire running from the outside where it's cut off, all the way through the house to a bedroom where it eventually stops.
Yeah.
I take my Vonage and I plug it into my Ethernet, and then I take my RJ11, the tiny phone cable that we're all used to, I plug it from the Vonage box directly back into the house.
Yeah.
Then that fills the house with phone support directly through Vonage, and all my existing phone jacks are on Vonage.
Yep.
The disconnecting of the phone on the outside is really important. Otherwise, you'll fry your Vonage box with that voltage. Now, what was happening, though, is I would go and start doing BitTorrent. I'd download .NET Rocks over BitTorrent, or I'd download an ISO image from Microsoft. And suddenly, my wife would get kicked off the phone. I needed quality of service. I needed an assurance that my wife's phone call was more important than my big-ass download.
Right.
So I can go into this firmware, like either SviaSoft or DDRT or any of the other ones that expose some of that QoS. And some of the newer Linksys default firmwares also have some kind of quality of service. And I can do quality of service based on either physical port, like let this box that's plugged into port number 2 be more important than that one. I can do it by MAC address. This unique identifier, regardless of its IP address, deserves more respect, or by protocol.
QoS, is this just a bit, or are there different levels of priority?
Ah, there are as many levels of priority as that firmware chooses to express. On the Linksys boxes, they've got bulk, express, standard, and premium. So premium is basically like, this absolutely requires, you know, this is so important, make it happen. And bulk is, get it there when you get it there.
Yeah, so it's nice to have at least a few different choices. So if you have a couple of different protocols going on, you can stratify them.
Exactly. And for what I needed in my house, I said, this MAC address, the MAC address of my Vonage box, is so important, it's premium. All traffic, get behind this guy.
Yeah.
While BitTorrent, I said, was bulk. I don't ever want a BitTorrent pushing my wife off the phone.
Yep.
HTTPS, I made it express. little bit better than standard. It was important. I don't want to have my credit card get kicked off because of something else.
Right.
FTP, lower it to bulk. And one of the nice things about DDRT is it has a huge list of different protocols that it can make decisions about. So you can say, well, I want my Xbox Live to get the best possible service guarantee. And I can do it by protocol, regardless of how many Xboxes I have in the house.
Hmm. That's nice.
It is nice. Some of the other things that you can do are like port forwarding. So I have a replay TV. I've got actually two of them. This is a like a TiVo.
But software it's TiVo.
Yeah, no, it's not a software TiVo. It's,
oh, the replay TV.
It's
yeah.
the one that
I thought you were talking about. Beyond TV. I'm sorry.
I have one of those too. But my replay TV is the TiVo that didn't happen.
Right.
Right. It's the Betamax of TiVo. It's better, but no one's going to use it.
Right.
So there's a really interesting thing called Poopli. Poopli. It's basically a sharing network for replay people because the replay TV allows you to FTP television shows to your neighbors.
Oh, cool.
Now, it's not meant in a Napster kind of stealing television kind of a way because you can only send it one hop. You can send it to your neighbor or your mom, and that's it. From there, you can watch it or stop it. So the replay TV, though, was designed before UPnP. Universal Plug and Play and NAT traversal were really a big deal. So you actually have to punch a hole in your firewall. I don't want my replay TVs living outside my firewall. So I went and picked a high up port, 24,000 and something. Mm-hmm. And then I can go into my firmware and say that MAC address, the unique identifier of my replay, gets this IP address. That's called, basically statically allocating DHCP. So I can say that it will always get that IP address.
Right.
And then I punch a hole in my firewall just for that one port and just for the replay TV. And then I go to poopli.com and I can say, oh, shoot, I missed Desperate Housewives last week. Can you send it to me? And it'll be sent over that particular port just to my replay. It's not a major hole in my firewall. And I can also set quality of service so that multi-gig file doesn't cause me any trouble.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
It is.
So, poopli.com, is this a place where you can...
If you have a replay TV, you can go to poopli.com and sign up. It works for 4500 series or 5000 series replay TVs. And it's just a place to meet people so that you can send shows back and forth to each other.
It's
not, to be clear, it's not a file sharing site. It's just a, I missed that show, can you send it to me site.
Okay. Is that legal, by the way?
Well, here's the thing. One of the reasons that Replay TV has not made a lot of friends is because of stuff like this.
Yeah.
But Poopli.com doesn't do anything that owning a Replay TV doesn't already allow you to do.
Okay.
It just lets you meet more people.
I see.
If you had a Replay TV and I had one, we could share files just because I know you.
Oh, I see.
It's just a meetup. It's a way to meet more people. And it also has a web services interface. So it'll actually take the information off your replay and upload it and put it in a shared catalog so I can search for all the different shows available. And say, oh, this guy I've never met before has that episode of Desperate Housewives. Can you send it to me?
So Replay TV sounds pretty awesome. How come it didn't take off?
Well, the interface wasn't friendly and didn't go boop, 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 or whatever the TiVos did. It didn't have thumbs up and thumbs down. I mean,
TiVo has a great interface.
TiVo is Windows and Replay TV is Linux. And
oh, well.
One is pretty and one is not. I love my Replay TV. There's all sorts of great stuff you can do with a Replay TV. There's another, if you want to see what a Replay TV is like from a networking standpoint, there's a really interesting thing called dvarchive.org, Digital Video Archive. It's a Java implementation of a Replay TV. So I've actually got two replays, and I've got one upstairs and one downstairs, so I can be downstairs watching a television show from upstairs. But the replays have limited space. With dvarchive, I can simulate a software Replay TV and use my machine as unlimited space for my shows.
Now, that means you also have to have video recording equipment on your machine.
Well, if I join poopli.com and tell them I have a replay and point them to my DV archive.
Oh, I see.
Then I can be receiving, but not sending. But poopli.com does keep track of a ratio. If you're receiving lots of shows and not sending them, then they'll think that you're a leecher.
Yeah, and you are.
Absolutely.
So do any of these Linux firmwares make working with UPnP any easier?
Yeah, they do, actually. The latest version of DDWRT, version 23, that I just downloaded, has an optimized for gaming button that basically takes care of the kind of compatibility that you'd expect to work with Xbox Live, and also has a UPnP page that was not present on the default firmware that lets you see what applications within your house have requested a hole punched in the firewall. I noticed as I was seeding BitTorrents for you using that Azurius. Azurius had requested two ports open, and I got to see it in that table. Now, there is a rumor that there are some UPnP problems with DDWRT version 23, and you can look at that up at the forums, but I personally haven't seen those, and I found it really interesting to hit refresh on that page and see the different things within the, within my house, including BitTorrent or my Xbox, that have requested holes in my firewall.
Yeah, that's nice to see.
It really is.
All right, so what else you got for us tonight?
So, one of the things that's important to note about these Linksys boxes that, I found it a little difficult. I had to dig for this. They're not really, PNP aware. They're not really ideal for lots of connections. You know, I seed BitTorrents for you because, we want to, you know, help the bandwidth out for DNR TV. Mm-hmm. And I started getting lots of errors on my firewall recently when I started seeding this. Turned out that the number of connections that this this device can track by default was limited to 512.
Huh.
Turns out you can use PuTTY. You can go into a terminal and you can say NVRAM, like non-volatile RAM. Mm-hmm. You can say NVRAM get RC_startup, and you can see a startup script, basically an autoexec bat that your little router runs through.
Hmm.
And you can make changes in there using echo, just like in DOS, where you can echo something and then use the greater than symbol to push it into a file. And you can update as part of this autoexec process that the router goes through a lot of the different settings that aren't necessarily made available. Hmm. I'm going to put these up on my blog, but I basically upped the connections to 4,096. And I also lowered the connection tracking timeouts. Typically, TCP on these routers will keep connections open for hours and hours. But with BitTorrent, you know, if someone goes away, I'd really like to kick them out within 10 minutes or so.
Right.
So I kind of came up with a best practice. I found in about three different forums, and I'll blog about that soon. But I was really just amazed that this little device was really a computer. I mean, I know that intellectually I can look at it and see that this is a machine, but you just don't expect to get a terminal prompt
right
out of a little half-pound piece of blue plastic. It's pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah, well, you've always been able to do that with routers like Cisco routers. You've always been able to tell that into and mess around with them and stuff. But, I mean, having a complete operating system in there is a totally different thing.
Right. I mean, to see the, you know, the Cisco funky command prompt is one thing. And it's so complicated, people get certified on it.
That's right.
To see a familiar file system and say, wow, I actually can VI and I can use some of my Linux skills to find my way around this. These devices are basically, you're turning a $60 piece of plastic into a many hundreds of dollars device.
Yeah.
There are other things you can do with voice over IP bridges. There are, you can make it a wireless bridge. There's an article at shrinkster.com/C1M up at anandtech.com where a guy used two of these devices and bridged them together to make sure he could have full wireless coverage over his entire house.
Wow.
There's really no limit to what you can do. And I had blogged about recently, I've got it set up where I can VPN back into my house from hotel rooms.
Excellent.
Yeah, that excellent. VPN stuff is up at shrinkster.com/C18. And you can set up a dynamic domain name service using dyndns.com. So if you have an IP address on DSL or on cable modems that happens to float, or you don't always know what your IP address is going to be, you can set up your own custom, like I could be .NET Rocks.dynamicDNS.com.
Yep.
And it would automatically update. And the firmware will actually make the web services call up to there and update that information for you.
I got a quick story about dynamic DNS, dyndns.com.
Mm-hmm.
My mother is all, you know, just getting into the computer the last couple of years, and of course is learning very slowly, you know. And so I've always found myself over there trying to, you know, fix her printer or, you know, fix some program that went awry. And, you know, it's a 15-minute drive to get to her house. So I set her up with a name at dyndns.com and set up VNC on it. And so then anytime that I wanted to connect, I could just connect via VNC, and she thought it was just like voodoo.
What kind of OS was she running?
Windows 2000 at the time.
Wow.
And now she's running XP.
But yeah, so now you can use the ask for remote assistance stuff.
Yeah, I still prefer VNC to that, however.
Got a good password on that, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, mentioning that you had said that she's on Windows 2000, and you know, I had a similar problem recently where I needed to connect to a Windows 2000 machine,
yeah,
and I didn't want to go to the trouble of setting up a VNC server.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really interesting service that Joel Spolsky from Fog Creek Software has set up called copilot.com, where you basically go up, you pay $5 or $10, they give you a ticket number. The person that needs help just goes to their site, copilot.com, and enters in the ticket, downloads a program that they run. It's basically a packaged version of VNC Server. They enter in the ticket number. They hit run. You do the exact same thing on the client side.
Oh, that's nice.
And they handle the NAT traversal, the network address translation. So they'll actually broker the traffic. So even if they're behind a firewall, they'll let you connect. They don't have to install a service. They don't have to do anything. And when you pay, you're paying for a ticket for 24 hours.
Huh.
It's a really neat thing at copilot.com.
That could save my life on a couple of occasions. I could have used that.
Definitely. And actually, this project was written by a bunch of interns. It was called Project Aardvark. If you go up to video.google.com and search for Project Aardvark, they're actually selling video and DVDs about how all of these interns built this thing and how they released the source back to the public because VNC itself was open sourced.
Interesting. And if you want to know more about VNC, go to ultravnc.sf.net. And that's a tool we use a lot here at PWOP as well.
Good stuff.
All right, Sky. Well, it's been a heck of a show. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week on Hansel Minutes.